Some Sundays, our readings appointed for us are difficult to understand. It's hard to hear what these texts from so long ago might be telling us today. Our readings for this Sunday, I don't think, are one of those. They're actually quite clear, albeit a bit frightening. We have the story in the Gospel of Luke of the rich man and Lazarus, the rich man who is never named, who lives in a great house and feasts every day well, while within his line of sight, presumably, lies Lazarus in agony and misery, suffering alone and unwanted. But we hear that after death, the two men's fortunes are reversed, and the rich man finds himself in a place of torment, whereas Lazarus is comforted and with Abraham. But what's interesting about this parable is that even after death, even being in the lowest point one can imagine, the rich man still cannot see Lazarus as a person. And so he reaches out and asks Father Abraham to have Lazarus serve him, to go get him some water. And then when Abraham says no, he says, well, perhaps he could show up and show my brothers, because if they saw someone rise from the dead, then surely they would believe. But Abraham replies that they have everything already that they could that can help them believe, and that someone rising from the dead won't change that. And our readings from Amos and 1 Timothy convey a similar sentiment to the gospel. They say, woe to those who are comfortable now, woe to those who hoard wealth while others suffer. And so with verses and stories like this, it's perhaps no surprise that many Christians throughout history have rather studiously avoided these texts about wealth and money and focused far more on the things that Jesus actually said very little about. But if we look at the gospel, we see that according to Jesus' parable, it is possible to live and die in this world without letting it change you. That it's possible to die locked in our own short-sightedness and selfishness, even to the point where this rich man has the audacity to demand Lazarus serve him in his own hell. But if given the choice, it's hard to imagine that the rich man during his life would have looked and said, yes, this is what I want. This is where I want to end up, in a place of torment and agony, even if his choices seem to have led him there. And so this is the point of his question to Abraham, can you go and make my family believe differently? Which makes me wonder, what does it mean to change? Change, metanoia, it's our parish theme this year. And yet, what this story seems to suggest is that information in and of itself is not enough to change our hearts and our minds. So how do we change our hearts if even a message from the dead won't do it? As I asked myself that question this week, I thought back to two times in my life when my heart changed. I thought first of all of when I was a freshman in college, and I showed up to this barbecue because I was a freshman in college and I wanted to make friends. And as we sat around having a discussion, at one point I raised my hand to ask a clarifying question, and suddenly they said, well, thank you for volunteering to be in charge. And so I found myself in charge of a group that was tasked with having discussions around racism on our campus, our college campus in South Carolina. And my background, I was from a very white, a very privileged, evangelical, Christian, conservative background. And I didn't know how to have those conversations at all. I didn't know the language. I didn't know the terms. The systemic racism was something that I had never thought about or encountered because of my privilege. But I was also a college freshman, and I was desperate that these people like me, that they think that I knew what I was talking about. And so, really, mostly just to save face, I started reading, I started researching, I had conversations with folks, I did a lot of listening because I definitely didn't want to do a lot of talking. And over time, slowly but surely, I found that a new perspective was opening up to me, a new way of seeing and understanding the world that I had been blind to before. And it wasn't one moment, it wasn't one article, it wasn't one piece of information, but rather the continued being in community with these folks, the multitude of conversations and moments that over time changed my heart. The second thing I thought of was when I started in seminary. Many of you have heard me say before that when I showed up, I hadn't been in church for 6 years, and I wasn't comfortable with a lot of the aspects of church that were in seminary, one of those being praying out loud. I was terrified of it, and before each of our classes, the professors would look around and they would ask somebody to pray out loud. And for my classmates, most of whom had come to seminary studying to be pastors, this was no big deal. But for me, it was very anxiety-producing. I would break out in a cold sweat before each class as the professor scanned the room looking for who it would be. And so I wrote down a prayer on every single one of my notebooks just in case it was me. But in my Urban Fellows class, which was a smaller, more intimate cohort, I had the guts to tell them that I just didn't do that. I just didn't pray out loud. And my classmates essentially said, "We don't care. You're praying out loud." And so, time and time again, even though it was desperately uncomfortable and frightening and fumbling even, they encouraged me to keep trying. And over time, slowly but surely, I found that something was changing in me until one day, many, many months down the line, someone called on me to pray out loud, and I didn't feel as afraid as I used to. And so when I think back to both of these instances, it was in part because I wasn't given an easy out that my heart changed. I was in relationship with these people. I knew them and they knew me, and I had to see them week after week. And so I had to change in order to stay in community with these people, even though it was slow and tedious and uncomfortable. What about you? Can you remember a time in your own life where your heart changed? What that felt like? What the process felt like? Because when I think back on my own life, I have to agree with Abraham. It wasn't merely information or a clever argument that changed me. It was the relationships. It was being in community. It was not having an easy out, even when it was scary and uncomfortable. And I think at its best, this is what the church offers us. It isn't entertaining or fun, but rather this group of people who gather together week after week, trying to become something different, slowly and uncomfortably and continuously. Because after all, what was built over a lifetime can't be undone in a single day. We need each other to keep going, to persevere through those hard and awkward times of transformation. But as we know, our faith isn't just shaped in the hour once a week that we spend here in this building. We often talk about Christian formation, and when we discuss that, we do often mean what happens here in this parish, in this church. But we are being formed every moment of every day. The question is, are we conscious of it? And are we becoming who we want to be? After all, for the rich man, he was formed every time he walked over and around Lazarus lying at his gate. Every time he avoided that which was uncomfortable or disgusted him or frightened him, he was forming who he was. But what Jesus points out is that what he was avoiding was actually the place of his own salvation. It wasn't just about Lazarus's salvation, but also the rich man's. That every time he looked away, the chasm between he and God remained uncrossed. Love of money and comfort and self prevented him from crossing that chasm in life because it made him numb to it, asleep to what really mattered. After all, if God's primary way of showing power, as our collect today says, is in showing mercy and pity, then the rich man divorced himself time and time again from the power of God, giving himself over instead to the power of earthly comforts. So is it any wonder then that he remains divided from God even after death? Death hasn't changed his heart any more than Lazarus's suffering did. And it's just that now the things he put all his focus and time into are gone. And this is what should bring us all pause today in our readings, that it is possible to live life and not let it change you. That God respects us enough to let us choose how we will live. And that great wealth and privilege aren't just bad because it means that others don't have enough or suffer, but it also means that we run the risk of becoming so numb, so unchanged, that we can't even see the chasm between us and God. So yes, the rich man should have helped Lazarus because Lazarus was in need. But it wasn't just about him saving someone, but it was about him being saved in the process. So the question for us today then, what in our lives have we been avoiding? Have we tried to not know, not see, not understand? Because remember, God's mercy and goodness is always waiting for us, if only we can open ourselves to its transforming power and mercy. In the words of 1 Timothy, "As for those who in the present age are rich, they are to do good, to be rich in good works, generous and ready to share, so that they may take hold of the life that really is life." May we too take hold of the life that really is life. Amen.